Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we'll ask any Vietnam veterans listening today to help Brooklyn College history professor Philip Napoli build an oral history. He has just released a book called Bringing It All Back Home, an oral history of New York City's Vietnam vets. He is still collecting stories to include in his archive, and we would like to invite Vietnam vets to call in to reminisce about a couple of things about your experiences after returning from the war. Did people treat you like it was a disgrace? And we will hear that word come up in this clip. A disgrace that you had fought in the war? And did you yourself see people differently if they enlisted or were drafted or didn't serve at all? And what do you think the ramifications are for today? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Call right in. Philip Napoli was one of the chief researchers for Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation, about the Americans who fought in World War II. He has since turned his attention to the Vietnam generation. Professor, thanks very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much for having me, Brian. It's great to be here.
And I want to begin with a clip from your archive that you feature prominently on your website. This is a Brooklyn vet named Henry Burke. And in this one-minute excerpt, he talks about the way he saw other people his age when he returned home through the lens of whether they served or not, even whether they enlisted or got drafted and wound up over there, to decide who was patriotic or not. And then he'll talk later in the clip about how he realized that other people saw him as disgraced for having been in the war. So 60 seconds from the archive, Vietnam vet Henry Burke.
One day you're in Vietnam and the next day you're home. You know, more or less. I mean, in my case, I was in St. Albans for a good 6-7 months. And at no time did they debrief.
All right. Sorry, an apology, folks. That's a different Henry Burke clip that we're going to use later in the segment, which we will do. Now we'll hear that 60 seconds of Henry Burke on the topics that I mentioned.
The only guy that joined was John Fulham, and he got drafted. And I think a friend of mine, Billy Joyce, but I'm not sure. I think he joined, but they took him out for fly feed or something. I don't think he did a whole 3 years or so. Mm. And, you know, you kind of started looking at them like, you know, where's your patriotism? You know, don't you guys care? You know, and then, of course, the whole world, well, not the whole world, but the United States attitude changed. You know, it's not like today. Oh, you know, they're heroes, they did this, they did that, you know. We didn't have that, you know, like, I know guys that came home, went back to work, and the boys would tell them, don't tell anybody you're a Vietnam vet. You know, we don't want to start nothing. And I mean, you know, you felt like it was a disgrace to be in the military.
You felt like it was a disgrace for being in the military, said Vietnam veteran Henry Burke, part of the Vietnam Veterans Oral History Project of Brooklyn College History Professor Philip Napoli, now related to a book, Bringing It All Back Home, an Oral History of New York City's Vietnam Vets. And again, I want to invite any other Vietnam vets listening right now to call in and build on that oral history. Did you also find when you came home that other people thought it was a disgrace that you were in the military? What kind of memories or feelings did hearing that clip raise for you? 212-433-WNYC if you want to accept this invitation and let your voice be heard. 212-433-9692. Call us right up. Did anyone ask you to hush up the fact, as he describes there, about that one employer? Also, he talked about having enlisted versus his friend who had been drafted. Did you feel that divide in Vietnam or when you came home? If you were drafted into the war, how do you feel about the draft today? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. There's so much just in that one-minute clip that you Vietnam veterans listening right now might react to and add to for this oral history project. 212-433-9692. And while those calls are coming in, Professor Napoli, can you reflect on one of those? thoughts, the story that he told of his boss asking not to disclose to other workers that someone was a vet?
I heard this story often. There's a reason why I feature it. Many men and women who came back from Vietnam felt as though they shouldn't speak of it for a variety of reasons. There were lots of negative comments made in the press and personally and privately that at least people told me about that indicated that service in Vietnam was somehow not respect-worthy. And men, this clip was recorded in 2005, men and women still feel the sting of that kind of opprobrium directed at them.
Did people say if it divided up politically? Did anti-war folks view the vets with more disdain, or did they more view them as victims, victims of the government, working class victims of the draft and a misguided war machine? Did it divide up as, you know, into opponents of the war or supporters of the war?
Remember that my work was about the experience of the men and women who served.
In terms of how they related it.
But they very often indicated that the people who offered these kinds of opinions were the anti-war types, that people who didn't appreciate what the United States was doing in Vietnam found the men and women who served to be somehow less than worthy.
You seem to be suggesting whether or not it's true, that was the perception.
That was the perception.
And in that clip, Burke talks about the way he saw other people his age when he returned home through the lens of whether they served or not, even whether they enlisted or got drafted to decide who was patriotic or not. Did you hear that a lot?
I did. Mr. Burke certainly went to Vietnam as a patriot, as many of the men and women who went to Vietnam did. And they believed that their service was the right thing to do and wondered why others felt differently. New York City's Vietnam veterans, I think, especially early in the war, really did see their service as something to be proud of, something that their fathers and uncles might well have approved of. I think the opinion about that changed as the war wore on.
Let's hear from some of our callers, and then we'll keep talking about the book. Earl on Staten Island, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, after I returned, I went back to art school.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my professors in school was very much against the war. And he had done a series of paintings, I found out later, about the war. And when he found out that I was a veteran, I could really feel that, you know, he didn't like the fact that I was a veteran in this class.
Can I ask if you were drafted or if you enlisted?
I was drafted, but then I enlisted in the Marines because a lot of my buddies from school had already joined the Marines. And so I joined the Marines and followed them.
And did you confront your professor on this, or how did you deal with this perception, or did it follow you onto, you know, other turf outside the art class?
No, at the time I was kind of like, I didn't really realize that I had PTSD, and I was like really, going through changes, and so I really didn't have within me to stand up to him, you know.
Uh huh. And
yeah,
how long did it take you to realize that you had PTSD?
It took a while, maybe about 3 years.
And that's
because I was, continually going through, depression and things like that. And then I kind of, realized, and then I went to the VA to try to get help.
Any lessons in your experience for Iraq and Afghanistan vets? Or maybe not. If you don't see one, that's okay.
Yeah, I think that... No, I can't say anything right now.
Right. Okay. Earl, thank you very much. I really appreciate
sure.
your call. And
okay.
good luck to you.
Talking about these things is really, really hard.
Absolutely.
And Earl's experience is not all that uncommon in that it's difficult to lay fingers on precisely what you want to say, although you know you need to communicate something. And so I would offer this as a hint or suggestion about men and women coming home today, that the takeaway from the work I've done might be to find a community, to make a community, to don't isolate yourself, to don't bottle up the experiences like Earl was effectively forced to do by the anti-war professor who didn't like the war. I do want to say that the experience of Mr. Burke and many others about being shut down when they returned to Vietnam from Vietnam was not universal. It's not the same, wasn't something that happened to every last person. Mr. Anthony Wallace, also featured in the book, tells a story about returning to Brooklyn College in 1970 while actually being stationed at St. Albans Naval Hospital in Queens, recovering from wounds received in Vietnam. Somebody in the classroom at Brooklyn College said something negative about being a Vietnam veteran. Mr. Wallace had to attend classes in uniform. And the college professor stood up and told the student that the student had no right to make accusations against Mr. Wallace for what he did in Vietnam. So that these experiences are individual. There's a kind of a kaleidoscope effect when talking about Vietnam.
Tom in Nyack, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Tom.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You were in Vietnam?
I was in Vietnam, 70 and 71, enlisted under duress. That means that you were number one on the draft list, so you thought you'd shop around a little bit, and went to Vietnam. In the Midwest, by that time, almost everybody was either getting drafted or was a CO or was not qualified. So the universe of people going was massive. A couple years later, when I moved to New York, I found that that was not at all the case. And in fact, it became, in professional circles, rather unique for somebody to have been in the military in Vietnam. And that struck me that for these folks who are coming home now with a very small number of people percentage-wise in the military and having served compared to past wars, they must feel a tremendous uniqueness in the society as a whole and really not able to communicate with people.
That's really interesting, Tom. Thank you for adding that. And I think people don't realize, Phil, the proportions of society that fought in World War II compared to Vietnam, compared to Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, 55,000 Americans died in Vietnam. We've had about 5,000, I think, die in Iraq and not that much in Afghanistan. And that's a reflection of, you know, the size of the population that's gone over there.
I think that's exactly right. And after the Vietnam War ended, it was estimated there were about 250,000 New Yorkers who had Vietnam-era military experience. We can't tell exactly how many of them were in combat in Vietnam. Today there are about 80,000 New Yorkers who are Vietnam-era veterans. And right now there are about 50,000 men and women who served in Iraq and Afghanistan in New York City.
Oh,
so that
many?
The numbers, yes, and it's expected to rise. But still,
that's more than I would have guessed. That's really interesting. And how about, since you worked on Greatest Generation, do you know how many Americans were killed in World War II?
It's about 400,000. I'd hate to be quoted, but I think it's about 400,000.
So just to give some sense of how massive the public participation was in that war, relatively. Why did you focus on New York City? Bringing it all back home, an oral history of New York City's Vietnam vets is your book title and your project. And did you find anything unique or different from other parts of the country or from the suburbs in the experience of New York City's Vietnam vets?
You bet. The first, of course, the reason to focus on New York City's Vietnam veterans is because of their numbers. There are about, as I said, about 80,000 Vietnam-era veterans in the city now. If New York City's Vietnam-era veterans were an immigrant group, they'd be the ninth largest in the city. They were overwhelmingly working class in origin, but the veterans are a diverse slice of the city's population. There are Catholics and Jews, Protestants, Irish Catholics, Italians, African Americans, Puerto Ricans, and more. And you can't get that kind of diversity, say, in eastern Kentucky. So one of the reasons to focus on New York is because of the diversity of the people who went and served there. And then there's a third reason, and that is a book about the city's veterans helps us begin to understand the city a little bit better. We don't really have historical works exploring the subject of the relationship between the country's cities and Vietnam just yet.
John in Jericho. John, thanks so much for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you. I was drafted in 66 out of Long Island and was in Vietnam in the late 60s. I guess the irony that I share with your screener is that I, having served in Vietnam, returned to finish college and I was drafted because I wasn't finishing college quickly enough. And I made a lot of friends in college. And then even closest friends, after several months, I let them know I actually had served and I had in Vietnam. And these friends then expressed immediately, this idea that, you know, I'm a baby killer. And of course, I wasn't a baby killer, and I wasn't killing anybody. But the point was that that ended the friendship, and I expressed to them in parting that the most of the people that I served with and who actually served for me, because I was commanding them, didn't want to be there. They didn't know anything about why they were there. They didn't know anything about this 7,000-mile-away little strip of land. And then they had come home to this kind of abuse. And the irony was, economically, which I think is true today in Iraq, in Afghanistan, was that those of us who were drafted had no influence with local draft boards. We had no, whether it was spelled in terms of money or stature in the society, and the draft boards in the wealthier neighborhoods were, I think, the most subject to abuse. So those drafted, and I had, say, 25% of my soldiers were black, and yet at that time only 10% of the soldiers, I mean the population of the United States, was black.
Mm-hmm.
There was an economic component to what happened then that was really sad. And it's true today. We have effectively an economic draft because
right.
people are pulled out of National Guard.
And, you know, some people who were against the draft during Vietnam have turned around their view and have come to hope that the draft is reinstated someday because the economic draft seems more unfair than having, let's say, a non-manipulated draft, if there's such a thing that's possible.
I strongly share your view.
I share that view.
I think it would end the war immediately.
Yeah.
Create a draft. And you will have people in the streets on the following day.
Public pressure. John, thank you very much for sharing your story and your views. I really appreciate it.
John's one thing that came across to me in John's comments was, once again, the pain and difficulty of talking about these kinds of matters. The men and women who served in Vietnam were really effectively asked to be quiet. Many of them were. And opening up now can be quite hard, but also kind of therapeutic.
We're almost out of time. I want to first make sure that people know where they can participate in the ongoing Oral History Project, because as we hear with the examples that we've taken on the phones, and folks, we really appreciate your calls, and I apologize to those of you who are not going to have time for, but for people who want to talk in this Oral History Project and get their voices on the record in the context of your ongoing work, how do they do that?
They can contact me through my website, philipnapoli.com.
And when you do that, you can see and hear some of the clips that are up there that are really moving, as I did over the last couple of days. I just want to ask you one thing about Greatest Generation, since you were a researcher on that book with Tom Brokaw. Not to take anything away from the Depression and World War II era Americans who rose to incredible challenges, I never liked the title of that book because I felt it slighted Vietnam vets and everyone else by implication. And maybe that's not what Tom or the publishers meant, but people rise to the challenges of their own times, whatever they are, the Civil War, the Civil Rights era, whatever. And to label one the greatest seemed unnecessarily competitive or aggrandizing. And you can agree or disagree with me if you want, but how do you think people should hear that title?
Tom was deeply, deeply impressed by going to Normandy and at one of the anniversaries of the invasion of Europe and looking at what those men did, getting a visual representation of what it must have meant to climb those heights. And he came away impressed that these men and women were somehow extraordinary. I'll give you my personal opinion. It meant nothing then. It means nothing now. I didn't love the title either, but okay.
And you saw a progression of your work from that book to this one?
It absolutely did grow out of that work. I learned an enormous amount working for Mr. Brokaw. It was great fun. I had the opportunity to interview amazing people. My favorite interviewee was Julia Child, as you can imagine. She was a charm.
And we leave it there with Brooklyn College History Professor Philip Napoli. His new book is Bringing It All Back Home, An Oral History of New York City's Vietnam Vets. Does the book come with audio, or do people just go online for that?
You know, I'm afraid you'll have to go online.
Okay. And if you want to meet Phil Napoli and talk about the book, he's got an appearance coming up at the Brooklyn Historical Society on June 22nd. That's next Saturday.
Correct.
128 Pierpont Street downtown. 2 to 4 in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon for Phil Napoli at the Brooklyn Historical Society. Thanks so much for coming on with us and for this work and for listening to some Vietnam Vets with us here on the air today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the Supreme Court says you can't require proof of citizenship for someone to register to vote. That ruling just came down this morning. We'll get details. Stay with us.